Our last day to hear Senate bills in the Ethics and Elections Committee. I know there's a group of people that are pretty excited about that, frankly, and I won't mention any names for the record. We do have committee members who are all over the building this afternoon, so I would ask for your patience because we're probably going to be going back and forth between a number of things. I have some students here from Willamette that would like to present some public testimony on Senate Bill 1098, so I'm going to bring them up and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1098. You should also have in front of you the dash one amendments, the dash two amendments, the dash three amendments, and the dash four amendments. So come on up.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Edward McLone. I am a student at Willamette University. I reside in Portland and am the campus organizer for the Willamette College Democrats. It's my pleasure today to come before you to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 1098. At a recent College Democrats meeting, we voted unanimously to support and promote the bill. This legislation, we believe, will dramatically expand the opportunity for young people to vote and register to vote and participate in Oregon politics. All too often, young voters have been left out of the political process through the failure of voter outreach programs and young voters' lack of representation in political organizations. Policies enacted by this legislature and in legislatures to come directly affect the Oregon my generation will inherit. Unfortunately, despite our vested interest in the policies of our government, young people lack the representation to have our voices heard adequately. While businesses, teachers, labor unions, police, firefighters, cities, and counties all have lobbyists who come and represent their points of view, we have no such organization. Students, by default, are their own lobbyists. In order to be heard, we rely upon three V's: our vote, our voice, and our volunteers. Without these three tools, our voices would be essentially useless. We don't have large sums of money to donate to campaigns or establish political action committees. We have our limited tools, and we do our best to ensure we are heard and represented, as you can see today. Willamette College Democrats have worked tirelessly this year in order to increase the weight of students' voices in Oregon politics. Before the special election in November, we registered more than 115 new voters, representing approximately 15% of Willamette's residential population. We also volunteered on ballot measure campaigns and have brought four candidates for statewide office to come speak on campus. While our hard work has certainly brought greater participation of young people in government throughout the Willamette community, our efforts are constrained by our small size. Senate Bill 1098 provides a valuable tool to empower young people to participate in the political process. Instant voter registration, as provided for in this bill, offers yet another opportunity for young people and others of all ages to register to vote while participating in the common task of applying for a driver's license or state-issued ID card. From my experience as a lifelong Oregon resident and public school graduate, I can say that Oregon's government has done a poor job providing easy opportunities for young people to register to vote. Some may accuse me of being a politics nerd, and in all due respect, I think that may be true, but I would say that just because I registered to vote for the first thing that I did when I turned 18 that morning does not exclusively make me a nerd. However, I think I may have exposed myself already. I know many people who, despite the efforts of college Democrats and the limited availability of voter registration forms, still haven't registered to vote. These same people, students my age and older, have their driver's license and have a car on campus. Senate Bill 1098 provides a valuable tool which allows them to have their license, their car, and their ballot on campus with them in one simple form. Young voters have frequently been accused of apathy and laziness when it comes to electoral politics. While I would concede this is partially true, a significant level of responsibility for the lack of young voter participation results rests in the lap of government organizations. While us of the College Democrats will continue to ensure that the votes, voice, and volunteering of young people matters, we ask for your help in making voter registration easier for young people and people of all generations. Please support Senate Bill 1098. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Okay, now, basically, as there's no, it's a real hassle.
I need to get your name for the record.
Sorry, I've never
done
this before. My name's Trevor Littell. I'm a fellow member of Willamette University College Democrats. And if it's okay with you, I'd like the ability to come here and speak my voice. Okay. Now, okay, there's the 2004 Census Bureau says that only about 19% of voters ages 18 to 24 actually voted in the 2002 elections. And this really shows one of the problems that is facing not only my generation, but America as a whole. Voter apathy. And one of the things I think that this bill can help solve is voter apathy. And, okay, I'm going to be frank. It really is kind of a hassle to go out and vote. You have to go get your registration. You have to sign up all the little forms. It's just a hassle. And as a busy 19-year-old, I don't really have that much time. Actually, I love politics. I'm a politics nerd, just as Edward said he was. And I didn't honestly get to vote. I didn't register to vote until this last election when someone handed me the form. As much as I love politics, not everyone else my age loves politics that much. And really, I think that this bill 0198, really helps to simplify the process. I think what it does, as I'm sure all of you know, it basically, when you get your driver's license, which I can assure, not everyone registers to vote when they turn 18, but nearly everyone gets their driver's license. It basically simplifies the process and makes it much easier for young people, myself, all of us here, who are, may I remind you, the future of this country, which, yeah, it's pretty good. It makes it so it's much easier for us to vote. You know, with the great way that Oregon has the voting system set up, you get your ballot in the mail. All you have to do is mark it off, send it back in the mail. That easy. And I think that this, by passing this bill, it would help hundreds, possibly thousands of more people access to the vote and be able to voice their opinion and help curb the amount of voter apathy, which, as I'm sure all of you being very intelligent, respectable individuals, know that this is a huge problem, not just in the state of Oregon, but in America as well.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Greg Alderson. I'm a student at Willamette and also a member of the Willamette College Democrats. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. This past November, I voted for the first time as an Oregonian, and that is all thanks to the efforts of the College Dems voter registration drive. Were it not for this effort, I would not have cast my vote. The current voter registration system allows people my age to fall through the cracks. Ours is a voice largely unheard in the midterm elections from 1966 to 2002. 18 to 24-year-olds had the absolute lowest level of voter participation. As a college student active in state politics, my peers' registration is a priority for me. Streamlining this process as much as possible will literally bring voter registration right to the student, eliminating paperwork that many people my age think is inconvenient. While most 17-year-old Oregonians are licensed to drive, many, many fewer are registered to vote. Senate Bill 1098 uses a 17-year-old's eagerness to drive to also prepare them for their future civic duty. Between January 1995 and November 2002, 38% of the 18 to 24-year-olds who registered to vote across America did so on a driver's license form.
No names.
Further simplifying this process will help to bring the vote right to young people and people my age who currently are unheard. In this debate, the state of Oregon should look north to Canada and see the voter turnout programs instituted in Canada. Canadian tax forms, driver's license forms, and citizenship forms, and many other government forms all include voter registration options, and Canadian government revenue, postal, and elections agencies work together to keep voting lists up to date. These measures have yielded significant improvements in overall turnout as well as young voter turnout. I can only hope Oregon and the United States soon encourage participation in the political process as effectively. Senate Bill 1098 is a great first step. In addition to streamlining voter registration, it ensures that registration follows Oregonians. Section 3 directs the Secretary of State to coordinate with the U.S. Postal Service to update addresses of registered voters. This action helps demographics most likely to move, one of which is young people, to stay in the political system and keep voting. The 18 to 24 demographic has low lobby and low participation, as I've mentioned, so our voice is limited. This measure to increase voter turnout brings my peers and I back into the political discussion. Senate Bill 1098 drastically changes the way government responds to the needs of younger generations by combining the right of passage that is driving and the fundamental privilege of voting in one simple process that puts young voters behind the wheel and in the polls. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah Sanderson.
Oh, I'm just delighted as a Willamette grad. I had no idea that I registered to vote, but we at Willamette, at least in the 60s, weren't as engaged as you people are, and I'm just very pleased to see you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, you guys. Are you going to be able to stay for the rest of the hearing and work session on the bill?
Yeah, we'd love
okay.
to.
Okay. Sarah Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions. I hear the argument about the inconvenience, Madam Chair. Where do you register for the draft?
Senator Farrioli, Chair Brown, I registered for the draft with a card that I got from the post office right next to the voter registration form.
Bingo, Madam Chair. So, you know, I guess you made the point for me. The voter registration cards are no further away than your nearest post office. It's been stated that young folks move around quite a bit. And, you know, even though most of my youth happened well into the last century, I can still remember being quite mobile around my college years. How long is
Fair it? Fair early. Some might think you still are quite mobile.
That's true. How many days can pass before you have to notify the Department of Motor Vehicles of your new residence?
Senator Farrioli, Senator Brown. The answer to that, I'm not sure. If I may, to the voter registration and the draft card, you can also register for the draft online, which is not available for voter registration.
Oh, that's good. Good to know.
So,
how many days?
Senator Farrioli, Chair Brown, I'm not sure.
Anybody know? Yes, sir?
I believe it's about 30.
About 30 is about right. 30 days. And how do you do that?
If I remember correctly, you have to...
Sorry. If I remember correctly, you have to simply... I'm not exactly sure because I only moved residence once, but I believe you just mail it in. I'm not sure exactly.
I think you do mail it in. They may have something online. I'm not quite sure about that. Bottom line for me is that I guess I really don't buy the inconvenience argument. You know, the idea is that there are many things where the convenience of online service has been made available to people, and bill paying and some other stuff. But I think there are a few things as important as registering and voting. And the mechanism that we have, I wouldn't call it inconvenient because you're never very far from a post office. And there are other reasons to go to a post office. And every ATM, most of them, I should say, vend that all-important mechanism, the connector between carrying out your civic duty by registration, that's postage stamps. So, you know, stamps are available at every ATM, voter registration cards. Anybody that wants to pick up a supply of voter registration cards can do that. And one last question, Madam Chair.
Sarah Ferry.
When you registered for college, did a voter registration card come in the registration packet?
They probably registered online.
Chair Brown, Senator Farrioli, during the opening days at Willamette, we were provided a card, but if I may, anything I feel that eases the voter registration process, where if you're already filling out a form, for instance, for a driver's license, and you can just be immediately enrolled in voter registration, I see that as a critical step to enfranchising young people and all people who are trying to register to vote and drive, because it decreases one more form that you have to go and fill out, even if sometimes they are provided to you at hand.
And finally, ma'am.
Senator Farrioli.
Any out-of-state students here? And were you 18 before you moved into the state of Oregon?
Yes.
And where did you move in from?
Colorado.
And did you register to vote in Colorado?
I did.
Did you get your absentee ballot from Colorado?
I did.
Did you vote it?
I voted in Oregon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farrioli.
You could have taken a minute and and said, I refuse to answer that question on the grounds that I intend to incriminate. You didn't vote twice, did you?
No. Did not vote in Colorado.
I just want to follow up because I don't know the answer to this question. I thought you might. I'm assuming if you fail to register for the draft that there's a penalty for that. Do any of you know what that penalty is?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, you get a very sternly worded letter from the draft that says if you don't do this, you can face a $15,000 fine and get thrown in jail, and any federal aid that you get will be immediately suspended.
Thanks. That's what I thought.
Chair Brown, if I may raise one more point.
Sure.
Okay. On to the point that Senator Ferrier already brought up about that you can basically register anytime at a post office. One of the things, actually, that I found very, very, to my displeasure and very annoying, was I would always put things off. And you only have a certain amount of time up until the election which you can register to vote. And on the election day, when you, oh my God, there's an election day, I can vote today. But if you don't have that means to vote, if you didn't register preemptively, if you didn't think about it specifically beforehand, and I would like to make the point that not everyone is as, I guess you could say, into politics as all of us might be, and even at a school such as Willana, which is right across from the Capitol, a majority of people are not thinking about registering. They're thinking about moving into college. They're thinking about what they want to eat that day. They're thinking about the mountains and mountains of homework we definitely get. And I just believe by allowing this extra step, this extra barrier that is going down, allowing more people, especially young voters who at the moment don't care that much, it would help to inform them because, you know, you get the ballot in the mail. A lot of people don't watch the local news to know what the local issues are. They just watch CNN and what have you to only care about the more national events. But if they get something in the mail to telling them what each of the bills are, the things that they can vote on, they don't have to do anything extra steps. They can go about their daily lives. They don't have to change anything else in their daily routine. But they get that in the mail, and it's much easier for them to make a decision just based on that without having to take time out of their day. Because, again, I would like to raise the point that it really is a hassle, especially, like, at least for me, moving into college was a real big step. And getting my dorm in order and all that things was a real big step. I didn't really have much time last semester. I don't have much time now. Neither of us really do. And as a busy student, I just find it would make it much easier if you just, basically, the easier it is to register to vote, the more voices are going to get out there, and the easier it is going to be for everyone. That's the point I'd like to make.
Thank you. Appreciate you, the three of you, taking time from your schedules to come join us. I will tell you that the average age testifying in support of this bill is substantially under 30. I think that's a good thing and a good sign. Unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties, a couple issues regarding the double majority and some other issues, we're not going to move the underlying bill forward, but I don't think this is the end of the conversation. I think it's the beginning of the conversation, and I look forward to continuing that discussion with you in the future. So thank you very much for joining us, and I suspect you also support same-day voter registration, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't want to give the clerks a heart attack today, so we won't have that discussion. So thank you all very much.
All very much.
Anybody else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 1098? Okay. With that, we're going to close the public hearing, open a work session. Colleagues, you have four amendments in front of you. -1 amendment deletes the original provision of the bill to allow the opt-out voter registration. Number two, present law allows the voter registration card to be sent anywhere as long as postmarked on time, delaying receipt by our county elections offices. This would require that the voter registration card must be addressed to an election official for it to count when received after 21 days preceding the election. I think that will address the issue of the county clerks receiving thousands and thousands of ballots after the 20-day cutoff line, and I think it's a really good agreement. I think there's an agreement with all the parties on this particular amendment. Senator Ferrioli, do you want to talk about
No, that was your amendment, was number two. Okay. And that amendment is copacetic with you?
Absolutely, ma'am.
Okay.
Madam Chair, all I need to do is look at the clerks, and if they're nodding, I'm
they're smiling. This is a good thing. Capture those smiles because it may be the last time today. Just kidding. The Dash 3 amendment addresses another issue raised by the county clerks and the Secretary of State's office, and that is that in order, when someone's moved to a new residence within the county, that they must explicitly request a new ballot after they submit a voter registration change. This would delete the requirement that a voter must request a ballot after they submit a voter registration change after the 21 days, so that a replacement ballot would be automatically sent when the county elections office receives a voter registration card with a new address. So I think we've got virtual support on that one, and or actual support on that one. And amendment number four allows the Secretary of State to collect information from the Postal Service to provide counties with information to update the voter registration database, and allows the county clerks to update the voter registration if the voter has moved to a new county. It's my understanding that this should save the county's elections office some money because they won't be mailing out as many ballots to faulty addresses. Senator Farioli.
We're in work session.
Yes.
Would it be permissible to invite a testimony?
Sure. I was planning on doing that, but I kind of wanted to work through
well,
that.
I will defer to the chair's wisdom.
Okay.
I see
all right.
I see some twitching going on in the audience.
So that's what number four does, money savings. So let's go back up, and we're in work session. The chair would move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1098. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none, so ordered. The chair would move the Dash 2 amendments. And before asking for discussion, does anybody wish to testify on the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 1098? No twitching. We see smiles. This is good. Oh, I didn't. That's a really good question. For the students that were here, the amendments were on the back table. There might be some more. Are they in the back racks, Marjorie?
Yeah, they're all
in the back rack. If you want to see what we're actually doing. And I hope you have a class that you can report on this bill. Anybody wishing to testify on Amendment 2 to Senate Bill 1098? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Any discussion from the committee?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Or just any discussion from the committee on the Dash 2s?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Everything's copacetic. The chair moved the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 1098. No witnesses interested, no testimony. Is there any objection to the Dash 2s? Hearing, seeing none, so ordered. Let's take up the Dash 3. Anybody in the audience wishing to testify on the Dash 3? Okay, Ms. Newingham, come on up.
Members of the committee, Madam Chair, Annette Newingham, Lane County Elections, and on behalf of the Association of County Clerks, just one point that didn't get corrected that kind of contradicts itself is on line 10, it has upon request still. We would have to take the upon request to make that section that follows work right so it doesn't contradict it. Oh, it would say under subsection B, the county clerk shall issue replacement ballot from the elector if the elector's registration was active prior to updating, taking the upon request, which eliminates that.
Take out upon request?
Yes, because the whole purpose of that was to make it so that people wouldn't have to request it in order to issue replacement ballot.
I'm sorry, I had the Dash 2 amendments and I couldn't see what you were talking about. Okay.
So can we have the page and line reference again, please, Madam Chair?
It's on the Dash 3 amendments, first page, line 10. And we may need to get Ledge Council in on that.
This would be considered a conceptual amendment.
Right. I want to, before we do anything, I want to make sure, I want to have Ledge Council verify it.
Right.
So. because this is actually.
If the county clerk receives the information upon updating the registration, the elector deadline,
Madam Chairman, I see the amendment. It's a 5-word deletion. Upon the request of the elector. Yeah. Delete those and you got it.
Right.
I believe.
That's. I want to hear from lunch.
Yeah. Just to remove all 5 words. Yeah, that would be okay too.
Upon request from the elector.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Okay.
She'll be able to explain why she.
Okay, that's what I thought. I wanted to hear from. Is she here?
No, she's in the back.
Oh, I didn't see her.
She's right there.
Okay. Ms. Zedlak, why don't you come on out? Thank you. We appreciate you being available.
My name is Gina Zedlak from Legislative Council. Is there...
The issue is raised on lines 10 and 11, the language in... I think the one of the major purposes of the amendment was deleting the requirement that we that the elector request a new ballot, and the language is still in there. So we're curious if you left it in there for a reason.
Well, I can tell you why I left it in there, okay. And hopefully why I've also addressed the issue.
Okay.
The way subsection 1 reads in, except as provided in subsection 2, and then after that, if the county clerk receives information updating the registration of an elector after the deadline. So information is really broad. So that could include a name change or something like that, as opposed to a deliberate address change on a registration card.
Okay.
And so I thought in that case, you wouldn't want to have the county clerks automatically sending out another ballot just because someone changed their names. In that case, I thought you might want to keep it the way it is so that if I change my name and I need a different ballot, I can request that and still have that option to request. Whereas it does mandate in subsection 2 that the county clerks, upon receiving a registration card updating the elector's residence or mailing address, then they would be required to send out the replacement ballot.
Ms. Newingham.
Annette Newingham, Lane County Elections. Well, that would somewhat defeat the purpose because we want to make it so that they don't have to request a ballot to make it easier. But I do acknowledge the name change. You wouldn't normally do it. There's some circumstances where it would be an absolute. But if they request a replacement. Yeah, okay. Sorry. This
Madam Chair.
Gets in a little stickier.
Sarah Ferrioli.
What seems to me to be the issue here isn't in line B, but in line A. If the elector's registration was inactive prior to updating.
Well, we automatically do that now.
Then they would have to request a ballot.
No, right now when they're inactive, we automatically send them update and send them a ballot.
Okay.
And when they're active currently, they have to actually request a ballot. They have to tell us on the phone, not only I need you to mail it, or they have to include a note with their ballot saying also send me a ballot. If the only time, if you wanted to clarify, it would be to say upon a residential change of address, or maybe say a name change only. You don't have to. I don't know what the risk is if you do a name change. Those are minimal compared to the rest of it, and I would probably like to get Jan Coleman from Yamhill County's opinion on that as well and make sure that we're together. But I would say the risk is minimal because they could only vote once no matter what. Even if they get the ballot twice, if they change their address, they can only vote once. So if there's a name change, you really do have that same issue. So I think it's a moot point is, I guess, my point.
You're agreeing with her.
I think it should be taken out.
Okay.
I think that upon request from the elector should be taken out so that we can just update the voter registration and send them a ballot automatically, because in most cases it is a change.
You will have received
and they may get a second ballot, but they can only vote once, and we're only going to count one ballot. So I think that it's the best thing for the voters as a whole.
Okay. Ms. Coleman, do you wish to address?
Is that okay?
I agree.
All right.
Okay. All right. Okay. Committee, your thoughts?
Madam Chair, I'd strike it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if it's wrong, we can do it over in 09. Or we can fix it in the House, Madam Chair.
We could do that. Okay.
Hang on.
Yeah. All right. Ms. Zedlick, did you want to wish to add something?
Chair Brown, Senator Farioli, I think you can strike it. There's a whole other in another, I think it's back here, maybe in ORS 254-470, there's a whole process set out for how you request a ballot and how that's incorporated into sending, how you request a replacement ballot and how that's incorporated to sending the ballot back and everything. So it would be a bigger, it's a change you can make. It would just be a bigger change,
okay,
in my opinion.
So just follow?
Ceremonial.
So you're saying striking those five words would then need, then there would be more changes later on in the statute that needs changing? Is that what you're saying?
Chair Brown, Senator Moniz Anderson, which five words?
The five words upon request from the elector on lines 10 of page 1.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking on my feet here, and I just want to make sure that, something's done, that it's done completely and well. So I think those other statutes would be affected possibly.
Okay. So let's take a minute. Let's have you guys go take a look at this, make sure we get everybody on the same page. I think the committee would be inclined to move forward on taking upon the request from the elector out so it's not in statute, so we don't run into the hassle of why we were here in the first place. But let's make sure we get it right. So any other comments on the dash 3 amendments? That'd be great. I think Mara can help, and let's figure this language out right. All right, Senator Farioli, is that okay? All right, let's take a look at the dash 4 amendments. Allows the Secretary of State to collect information from the Postal Service, allows the county clerks to update, dash 4 amendments. Anybody wishing to testify in the dash 4 amendments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
If I understand this, essentially the Secretary of State is the actor who would deal with the United States Postal Service lists and then provide that information to the locally elected county clerks and elections officials in each county, and I think that's an appropriate relationship to maintain.
I think we did both, and I think everyone is satisfied with that result. So. Okay, we're getting head noddings. Everything okay on this one? All right. We've adopted the ones, the twos. The chair would move the dash 4 amendment. Anybody wishing to testify? Any discussion? Any objection to the dash 4s? Okay, they're adopted. All right. Okay. All right. We're going to recess this work session and hopefully come back to it. Thank you for that suggestion. Mm-hmm. All right. Do we have anything? Let's do 1070. Okay. 1070, Dan Meek. Open a public hearing. Possible work session on Senate Bill 1070. And Mr. Meek, did you testify on this bill already?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
My name is Dan Meek, representing myself. The bill, the Dash 1 amendment, is kind of a nod in the direction, I think, of my testimony from last week, but it really doesn't accomplish anything. I would call this the tail wags the dog bill. What it does is that it allows the legislature, through adopting a poor funding mechanism, to nullify all of the provisions of any initiative, including provisions that have nothing to do with funding. I explained a week ago how this could work. For example, let's say that you have an initiative that regulates home mortgage lending. The measure may well have a cost of over $100,000. It may require some additional regulations, some additional funding to the financial regulatory folks. But it may also have non-programmatic elements, such as requiring disclosures to borrowers of exact terms, etc. What this measure would allow to occur is that it would allow the legislature, through a rather convoluted process, to not provide funding for it, and the result is that not only are the programmatic elements not implemented, but also the non-programmatic elements, that is, the prohibitions or the requirements on disclosure, are not implemented either. What the Dash 1 amendment does is deletes deletes some language on line 13 and 14, which stated that and the state initiative measure is not required to be implemented. Even if you strike that language, the result is the same, because the sentence before that states that if the people reject the legislation subject to referendum, the legislative assembly is not obligated to fund implementation of the changes to law. Well, in the case of additional disclosures for mortgages, for example, one of the changes to law is you have to have additional, that mortgage lenders have to have additional disclosures. If the legislature then is not obligated to fund implementation of the changes to law, then there isn't any funding for enforcement of the new disclosure requirements. So again, this allows the legislature to completely nullify an initiative that is adopted by voters through a mechanism of not providing funding for the programmatic elements, even if there are very important non-programmatic elements. The second problem is in subsection 4, which states that if legislation enacted by the Legislative Assembly pursuant to subsection 1 or 3 is referred to the people by means of a referendum, the initiative measure is not required to be implemented. Now, that's the whole thing. That's not just the things that require funding. That's everything. Is not required to be implemented during the period beginning on the deadline for filing a referendum petition on the legislation and ending on the date the governor proclaims the results of the election on the referendum measure under the ORS 254555. Again, far too broad, includes non-programmatic elements. And it would result, even if the voters were consistently voting in favor of this measure, both in the initial initiative and in the subsequent funding referendum, it would still say that a measure adopted by the voters by initiative would be in effect for a while, then would not be in effect for a year, which is the time between the filing deadline on a referendum and the actual election on the referendum. That's a full year. And then would be in effect again. So even if voters, essentially statewide voters, adopt the same measure twice, you still have a one-year gap in which all of the provisions of the measure would not be enforced. So this just doesn't make any sense. And it's only, I think its result would be to eviscerate the initiative process and to allow the mere filing of a referendum on the funding of a measure to nullify the measure itself after the measure has been adopted by the voters. Section 2 of the measure is itself an emergency clause. That's pretty ironic. This bill elevates the mere filing of a referendum to a status of nullifying an initiative adopted by the people, but the emergency clause in the bill itself says that this bill itself is not subject to referendum. So I don't think this is a good idea.
Thank you.
Senator, I have to agree with Mr. Meek for a couple of the reasons that he spoke to, but also I don't know how you could possibly bind legislators to funding at any particular level. First of all, we couldn't bind a future legislation with this piece of legislation. We've argued mightily over the term adequate. We've got Senate Bill 1 on the books, which talks about the quality education model. We have to file a report with ourselves if we don't, quote, adequately fund SB 1 or the quality education
measure
model.
1.
Right. So, you know, the bottom line is a lot of times essentially the report that we file, at least we have so far, is, well, we can't afford it. And that essentially is what we do. So, but requiring a future legislature to fund to some level of adequacy or inadequacy an initiative deprives the legislature of the deliberative function. And I think on the face of this, it may be unconstitutional. But so I would be a no in any case, Madam
okay.
Chair.
I think we've made the appropriate call to get the appropriate number of folks on the committee
okay.
to keep this vehicle moving forward. So
okay.
appreciate your testimony.
And, Madam Chair, I'm being requested next door at the at a hearing, Room A hearing on a bill, which I'd like to go make testimony on. But I would like to be back in the room for the vote. That's
all right.
Okay.
So when Senator Courtney arrives, we will pull you back over.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Meek. Appreciate your concerns. Okay. All right.
Sarah Monson.
We'll close this one and then
yes.
open.
I think what we will do is recess the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1070, and for the time being, and open back up the public work session on Senate Bill 1098. I don't know who wishes to come forward, but everyone has smiles on their faces, so I think that's a good thing.
Are you okay with this one, Jason?
Annette Newingham, Lane County Elections. We talked about it, and we should not make the change after all. And we're okay on it. We're on the same page. And just the on line 5 of page 1, which says except as provided in subsection 2 is what makes it the exception.
Okay.
I apologize raising the issue.
We're glad you did.
We are okay.
Great. I'm glad you did. And I'm glad Gina was here to help us out. And I really appreciate everybody taking a look at this again. So thank you both very much. That's why I was nervous about making changes from the dais. So, okay. All right. So we are in work session on Senate Bill 1098. The chair would move the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1098. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. So ordered. Are you okay with the moving? It's a referral to Ways and Means. Chair would move Senate Bill 1098 as amended to Ways and Means. With a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none? So ordered. Thank you. All right, so we've got one done. 1071. 1070. We're waiting on, so we need 1071. Okay. All right. Sense of Senator Courtney's arrival. Okay. All right. All right. We're in public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1071. In walking through the amendments, there were three amendments. The first is somewhat technical in nature. It fixes the reporting gap to ensure that any campaign finance transactions by a chief petitioner committee that were not disclosed in the September 2007 chief petitioner report need to be filed via Oristar no later than April 1st, and it provides an emergency clause so that this can take effect in a timely manner. Anybody in the audience wishing to testify on the dash 1 or the dash 3 amendments? Okay. And the dash 5 amendments. Hello, Mr. President. We need to go get Senator Farioli. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. The dash 5 amendments we've discussed pretty extensively changes the reporting deadline to 11:59 as opposed to midnight. I think that makes everyone happy. Does anybody wish to testify on the dash 5 amendments? Okay, Mr. President, do I need to let you know what you're doing?
No, I know what I'm doing.
Okay. All right, we're going to recess the work session and public hearing on Senate Bill 1071. and open the work session on Senate Bill 1070. We're waiting for Senator Farriola. He would like to be present as well.
I like these evening committees. 2 hours, 2 days. I like that. Bipartisan. You know, I know it. I'll be up there in just a minute, but I just wanted to sit by you one last time.
This is promises.
Male bonding.
All right. We're in work session on Senate Bill 1070. The chair would move the dash one amendments. Any discussion?
That was dash one.
Dash one amendments to Senate Bill 1070.
1070.
Just discussion, and then I'll call the roll.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Call the roll for the dash one amendments. Graham.
Senator Farriola. Sure. Yes. Aye.
Yes.
Sure. Heck. Why?
Speaker Courtney.
He's right. Yes.
Chair votes aye. The motion passes. The chair would move Senate Bill 1070 as amended to Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation. Now, would you please call the roll again?
Senator Farriola?
No.
Senator Montesano?
Yes.
Senator Atkinson?
No.
President Courtney?
Yes.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Mr. President, before you leave, we have one other. We're tackling another bill, and I didn't know if we needed votes or not. Do you need to leave? We're going back to 1071. We know how busy you are, Mr. President.
Get comfortable, Mr. President. you're going to be deep.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. The dash three amendment is not the emergency clauses in the dash one amendment, right? We only need the ones and the fives.
This makes you sound like
okay. I just want to clarify for the record.
Yes.
We only need the dash ones and the dash fives because there's an emergency clause in the dash one amendment. Looking for head nods.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay, ones and fives. So the chair would move the dash one amendment, which is the reporting gap amendment along with the emergency clause, to Senate Bill 1071. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. The chair would move the dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 1071. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none. Okay. The bill has been amended with the dash 1s and the dash 5s. The chair would move the bill as amended. Is this the one that does not have a fiscal?
71 does not have a fiscal.
It does not have a fiscal. The chair would move it to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Discussion. Would you please call the roll?
Senator Farriola?
No.
Senator Montesano?
Yes.
Senator Atkinson?
No.
President Courtney?
Yes.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. We'll fight it out later. We'll figure it out later. Okay. With that, we close the work session on Senate Bill 1071. Okay. Should we have done 1070? Thank you, Mr. President. We may need you, though, for Senator Walker's bill. So as soon as I get a signal from these guys, I'll let you know. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your courtesies and your service to the state of Oregon and to our committee, without which we couldn't be moving forward. All right.
Madam Chairman, arguably we're not moving forward with his help.
Thank you, Senator Farriola. All right. I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1083. Ms. Eaton, you wish to testify? I understand. Mr. Black, and then Anthony Johnson was here. Are you still here? Okay, good. All right. Why don't the three of you come on up?
Madam Chair, I am called away. I'll be back as soon as I can.
We just are so grateful for your presence. Every moment we can have the presence of your company.
Okay, okay.
Jason's leaving. Okay. Did I tell him Garrett and he's gone? I feel so bad.
It's okay.
Ms. Eaton, why don't you proceed?
Thank you, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My testimony is brief today. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I speak today in support of Senate Bill 1083. At your last meeting, the League had not reached a position on this bill, which is why I'm here before you again today. As you know, the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed citizen participation in government. After discussion of the Dash 1 amendments, the League is supporting the bill. We support a limitation on the length of time that the Supreme Court should have for deciding challenges to ballot titles. We also support the efforts that Senator Walker is making to accommodate the court's concerns, and I believe that is in the Dash 3 amendments. We support the reinstatement of the signature verification process and a more thorough verification of specific signatures. We support extending the time period for addressing election complaints from 90 days and then to 12 months with notification. There must also be recognition of a fiscal impact for additional investigators in the Elections Division. Thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Mr. Black, I think you were next.
Sure. Chair Brown, members of the committee, Justin Black from the Oregon Education Association. We represent about 48,000 members of the education community, all the way from custodial staff to bus drivers to teachers to community college staff and all around. I am testifying, I believe, neutral on this, supportive of some, not of others. I will say we are supportive of more training for the Secretary of State's office. They go through a lot of signatures, and anything to help them better verify those signatures, I think, is a good thing. We really like the fact of looking at signatures twice. As I said, we have observed the process, and they do look at a lot of signatures in a day, and a second set of eyes would be a very good thing. I think I'm going to end my testimony at that.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Yes, Anthony Johnson, Voter Power, Chair Brown, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us to speak again on behalf of Senate Bill 1083. Voter Power is concerned about the decline of initiative rights in the state of Oregon. I spoke last week and submitted written testimony, so I'll be very brief. This is a common sense and compromise bill that allows the restoration of initiative rights to begin. We would like to see further restoration of initiative rights, including allowing electors to sign petitions and complete voter registration cards at the same time. But this bill is a step in the right direction, and otherwise I agree with Ms. Eaton and the stance of the League of Women Voters.
All right, thank you. Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. Sarah Walker, are you ready? I understand. Do we have a technical issue on one of the amendments?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'll bring Gina up if you don't mind.
And then just so you know, and so I don't forget, Mr. Meek also wishes to testify. So.
Okay. And did you hear from Mr. Lindbeck already?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. I appreciate the accommodations as I'm chairing my own committee at this hour. We had a very complicated bill that we finally got through. So the Dash 3 Amendment replaces the bill, which is the easiest way to do this. So the Dash 3 makes the necessary changes, and we did find some technical problem, and Gina and I have sat down with Phil Schreiber Schradl and worked it out. There's also a dash 4 and a dash 5 that are separate amendments from the dash 3, and the dash 4 is the voter caging provision that I had talked about, and we expanded that to just not include political parties. It includes anyone who engages in voter caging would not be allowed to do that. The dash 5 is an amendment that allows any elector to challenge the active registration status of an elector who did not vote in an election. So after an election is over, it gives electors an opportunity to review the list of active and inactive voters so that we can move them to inactive list status. And this is helpful when we're talking about double majority and trying to get the necessary votes that we need. So let me go back to the dash 3, which is actually not too significantly changed from before. On page 2, we simply changed the word effect to effects. That's nothing new. That was what I testified to before. On page 4, which is our next change, that is the Supreme Court provision allowing them or requiring them to decide these matters, these challenges to ballot titles, within 45 days after all memoranda have been filed in response to a petition. So that is language we work very closely with the court on, and they approve of that language should we decide to move this bill. We also, if you turn to page 5, we extend that 45 days. As well. So that's all good to go. Section 3 is the section that we talked about earlier, which is the moving the signature verification process for initiatives and referendums into the Secretary of State's office to provide that consistency and training. And on page 6, you'll see the two levels of review that we talked about before. And page 7, sub 8, in the bold print there, is where the Secretary shall provide the training. These are all issues that I talked about with the Secretary of State's office, with both John Lindbeck and Gene Strait, the deputy, and also with Elon Hassan for a great deal of time. And these are items that are acceptable to them. They think they are good government pieces, and that certainly we can do much better at signature verification by doing it in this manner.
Senator Walker, can you hang on just a minute?
Yes.
You finish with this.
Okay.
And then.
The paragraph 9 right below that is a new piece that was not in your previous bill, and that was to allow observers in the signature verification process in the Secretary of State's office, similar to observers at the local county clerk's office when you go in to observe ballot counting of any kind. So I think that's quite doable and should not be objectionable. Page 8 is the 90 days after receipt of a complaint, the Secretary of State must decide these complaints, these election complaints, or provide notice that they can't do it within 90 days, but in no under no condition could they do it longer, take longer than a year. This is the area where we have a technical fix, because on page 9, we inadvertently captured criminal penalties, criminal complaints in that language. So Ms. Zedlick from Legislative Council has been in consultation with Phil Schradl, and we've come up with a conceptual amendment that is well written here. It's not typed, but it's printed in nice, neat language that we can provide to you, and we would request that we slip that into the bill. And Ms. Zedlick, can you explain that and where it would go?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, this amendment would go on page 9 of the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1083, and to be inserted after line 2, so it would be a new subsection 3 that would clarify that the brand new paragraph B right before it would not apply to complaints filed under subsection 1 or 2 that involved an alleged violation subject to penalty under ORS 260993. So that just exempts the criminal more serious allegations that would be subject to litigation.
And I apologize that it's not in typed form, but we didn't discover that.
Madam Chair, as I had said before in my committee, 28 days is not long enough. We really need one or two more weeks, really.
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, you are right. It's amazing what we've been able to do in a short period of time, mm-hmm. but when it's requiring little changes like this, that's when we find the difficulty. And then on page 10, section 6 is still the Secretary of State can update with Postal Service records, which, Madam Chair, I believe is in your own bill. So that's the dash 3s, and I explained the dash 4 and the dash 5. I am not supporting the dash 2s. I had those drafted for citizens who requested that they be drafted, and I do not support those because I believe the dash 3 gives us what we need. If we find the two levels of review and moving the signatures into the Secretary of State's office and providing that additional training still doesn't get us where we need to be, then we might want to look at dash 2 somewhere down the road. But quite frankly, I don't think the dash 2s work. Now, they'll argue with me about this, but I believe it gives a different set of rights to people whose signatures have been rejected than those whose signatures have been accepted. So it gives folks a second bite at the apple, and it sort of elevates, in my opinion, the signature to your signature on a ballot. And I don't believe, my personal opinion is that your signature on an initiative petition is not the same value as that on a ballot, simply because petitions often don't make it all the way to the Secretary of State's office. People can withdraw them at any time. They can be discarded when a whole signature sheet is thrown out. I mean, there are any number of ways that your signature does not make it to the Secretary of State's office. So I prefer the method here in the dash 3, and also would strongly support the dash 4 and the dash 5. Any questions?
What about, thank you, Madam Chair, the dash 1s?
Those are no good anymore. The dash 3s
replaced. That's what I thought.
Dash 3 replaced just pretty much guts the whole bill and starts over. So, because it gets very confusing when you have all these amendments.
And Senator Walker, on the dash 2s, I assume your issue with the dash 2s is the fact that it allows a rejected signature to be cured, but a valid signature on the statistical sampling not to be analyzed further. Is that
correct, Madam Chair? That would be why I do not support that. But I wanted the amendment drafted so that the citizens who cared about that issue could have a conversation about it and we could talk about it. It's also I think it adds to the fiscal, not that that's the big deal, because good government, there should be no cost to good government. But I think there are other issues surrounding that. But I first want to try the approach that we've set out in the dash 3. I think that's a prudent and practical way to proceed.
And did you have any discussions with the Secretary of State's office about absorbing these changes within their budget?
They cannot. So, okay. Madam Chair, this will have to go to Ways and Means because I anticipate they will need to add the extra staff. I believe the staff, the investigative staff, can be cross-trained to do signature verification. So I think we can keep the fiscal down in that respect. But they have been understaffed. I think they only have a half person, a half FTE for investigative staff, which may be why some of these complaints have lasted for 2 years and not been resolved. But also absorbing the signature verification will cost a little bit. It will take it away from the counties, however. They won't have that cost. And I think the counties will be quite glad to get rid of that process because I think they find it cumbersome. I think given the latest problems that we've had, they're not anxious to get back into the signature verification business. This is good government. I think there have been two editorials from major newspapers in the state who have indicated that Oregon should really do something about its signature verification process. And so, you know, in this budget environment, whether we can move it, I don't know, but I would suggest that this will have a fiscal that will need to go to Ways and Means.
All right. Thank you. Any other further questions for Senator Walker? Thank you very much. I don't know if you want to hang out.
Can I have this conceptual amendment passed up to you so that it will be for your record? And I am chairing a committee myself, so I will just scoot right next door. If Ms. Taylor, if you find that you need me, Ms. Taylor can scoot next door and give me a Hail Mary, and I'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Meek. Anybody else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 1083? Come on up.
How's that note?
I love you.
Creative one.
Okay. My name's Carolyn Wendell, Chair Brown and committee. I am a chief petitioner for referenda 303 and 304. I know that we have,
as we're sitting up here puzzling, trying to remember.
Okay. Okay. That was the House Bill 2007.
Great. Thanks.
And Senate Bill 2.
Thanks.
I know that some of the things have been thrown out in the dash 1083. And I just wanted to give you my background as a chief petitioner. I hear things that say that we don't care, that chief petitioners just randomly throw things out left and right like signature sheets. We are very, I can only speak for myself, but what I had was a great big feeling of responsibility to the voters that signed the signature sheets. We didn't randomly throw things out. We didn't do anything like that. We cared for each and every signature. And usually when people do a referendum or initiative, they get into the process, they put a lot of money into this. So they're not cavalierly throwing things left and right. In fact, we had a huge volunteer group that actually, when things came back and they weren't right, we called them. We had people driving hours to correct the wrong. And I also believe that that's the one thing that we just, you can't say that they aren't votes. When they come to me, I will say this, when they come to us, I was, you know, we have a lot of responsibility. I have to sign the Secretary of State's thing. I have to, it's a legal document. I could be thrown in jail. I could be fined for not doing my role. And to say that these votes, these signatures are nothing, it was shocking to hear that come out of the mouth of the people working for the Secretary of State. They are working for the people. They are our employees. We are the employers. And as far as I'm concerned, they weren't doing their job in protecting the lack of disenfranchisement that was going on here. And I will totally say that, okay, you don't want to have, we're not throwing them out randomly. That's number one. Number two is that you want to have, on petition sheets, you want to have any kind of a mark. It wasn't shown in dash three. Any kind of a mark on petition sheets are not counted. I mean, it'll throw the whole sheet out, disenfranchising either 19 people or if you have 10 people on a sheet or 20 people on a sheet. You know, what it disenfranchises those people, and it also is, to me, if you have a disabled folks, if you have the young trying to vote, or the old, or just people running through the mall or in church or something, or wherever they're at, I mean, this disenfranchises huge things. We're of the people, by the people, for the people, and we always have to remember that. So that really upsets me that if we make a little mark on a petition sheet, it gets tossed. And I would like to know the reasoning behind that. I mean, I can't see anything. If you want to, you know, empower the people and find out what the people think, why that would be a problem not to mark it off. Because, like, Mickey Mouse could sign. Mickey Mouse could sign, and you can't mark Mickey Mouse off. You know, that's my point. So that someone else told me that. I might be taking their thunder. But anyway, so I'm kind of upset about that situation. Thank you very much.
So would it be fair to say that you would agree that in terms of the signature gathering process, when it is so close, like the petitions were Frank Plan 2007 mm-hmm. and Senate Bill 2,
mm-hmm.
that the level of scrutiny by either the county clerks or the Secretary of State's office in terms of their analysis in terms of the signatures should be higher, that
they should spend more time and energy reviewing the signature.
I think what they should do is they should try to contact the people who they've thrown their signatures out. There was no contact. And I've heard, I said, how did this signature sheet, I mean, look at the way it's put together. You know, who puts these together? She says, well, you can come back and help me, you know, change it if you want to be on that committee. I said, my gosh, if you get an old person, they're signing down where the circulator signature is, you know. And on the back, you're supposed to have, like, rules for circulators and signers. By George, they don't have on the bottom, by the way, if you want to know all the scoop, go to ORS or OIR. It doesn't say a thing about that, not one thing. So whereas, you know, they didn't, why do you have to have the phone number? Well, you don't need the date. You need a phone number. You need contact information. Why? To find out if that's the real person. Then if you're not going to use it, why put it on there? Because you might make a flipping mistake. Sorry to say flipping. If you might make a mistake and then mark it off, you know, and then say, oh, my gosh, everybody's gone. You know, how do you get that back? So to me, it's like, why are you doing this? What's the reason for it, you know? And I have to speak up for all the people who signed, and I'm responsible for it. Mm-hmm. I feel a huge responsibility, and you guys must too. You know, and I'm not elected. I was chosen to do that, and I felt a huge responsibility to take care of folks. So when I heard everybody saying, "Oh, just throw them out randomly," holy cow, you know, you're just sweating over it and worrying. So anyway.
Okay.
That's me.
I really appreciate you coming forward
you,
and testifying this afternoon.
Thank you.
Mr. Meek? Oh, Mr. Peralta, whoever wants to go.
Madam Chair, distinguished senators, my name is Sal Peralta. I'm the chief petitioner on Initiative Petition 3 for 2010, and I'm here representing myself. I have concerns about some of the amendment or the changes that have been made to the Dash 3 statute, and I'd also like to speak briefly to Senator Walker's stated opposition to the Dash 2.
Very Olivia, yes.
The biggest concern that I had with the Dash 3 version of this, as opposed to the Dash 1, is the removal of Section 3 of subsection 3 from Section 4. Which previously read, prior to submitting an initiative or referendum petition for signature verification, a chief petitioner may remove a signature from a petition sheet if the signature is a duplicate of a signature contained on another signature sheet of the same petition, or if the chief petitioner determines that the person who signed is not an elector. Signatures removed under this subsection may not be included in a sample taken under ORS 250.105. This piece of language was intended to remedy some changes that happened to the Oregon statute in a bill that was passed in the last legislative session that was intended to prevent, and you just spoke to this issue earlier, that was intended to prevent people from filling out the remainder of a petition sheet, a circulator filling out the remainder of a petition sheet on behalf of a petitioner. So a signature sheet contains an address, a printed name, and a sign name and a date. And what my understanding was that this was intended to stop a circulator from filling out that line. That has subsequently been kind of reinterpreted, and the way it was written into the statute, it appears to me to make it impossible for a petitioner to remove duplicates without throwing out the entire petition sheet. And if that is how the Secretary of State interprets that in the OARs, that will be a problem for circulators, because it means you can't dedupe these initiative petitions, and there's a significant penalty, a 400 signature penalty for each duplicate that's found. My concern is the choice is to either throw out the entire sheet and, you know, basically disenfranchising potentially nine other electors on the sheet for a mistake made on one line, or to leave it in and run the risk of getting dinged for a 400 signature penalty. And I don't think that was the intention of the committee in the legislation in the last session. That's why we included that in there, and I would encourage you to retain that language or some formulation of that language so that we don't have that problem. As to the Dash 2 amendment, I am very appreciative of the potential cost savings, the potential increased training by bringing into the Secretary of State's office the handling of initiative petitions, the verification process for these initiative petitions. My concern is that there is currently no remedy for valid electors whose signatures are wrongly tossed out during the signature verification process. And, you know, I'm mindful of the fact that when I prepared that amendment, I was approached by two lobbyists for organizations that I strongly support and have for the entire time that I've been involved in politics in this state. Mm-hmm. And they were very disappointed that I'd offered the amendment, and they suggested that it would be a problem for them to work with me moving forward. And it was the kind of pressure that I didn't particularly appreciate. That's the kind of pressure that I think the Secretary of State's office needs to be insulated against. My concern is that unless we provide a remedy to valid electors whose names are wrongly excluded, it can open up the Secretary of State's office to charges of corruption or the appearance of corruption or the appearance of undue influence in a way that really isn't fair to the professional staff of that office. I've never had a problem personally with anybody in the staff. I find them to be, you know, highly competent and very talented people. And I don't think that in the absence of this kind of remedy, those people are in a position of being, you know, potentially unfairly criticized. And I also think that there should be some remedy for a valid elector who signs these petitions. In the last few years, we've seen incredible increases in liability for chief petitioners. We've seen incredible increases in the requirements in terms of disclosure on the parts of petitioners. And I think that some corresponding balance, I think, makes a lot of sense. But I've testified to this. And
yeah, Sal, and I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think the issue is, and what we tried to have it, and I'm sorry, I did not catch your name.
Wendell.
Carolyn Wendell. I don't necessarily disagree with you that there needs to be some sort of way of enabling folks whose signatures have been rejected to have that process be cured. I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, particularly given the expert testimony in front of Judge Mossman, you have to have an opportunity then to challenge signatures that were considered statistically valid that may not necessarily be. For example, if Mickey Mouse did show up on one of those petitions and it was considered statistically valid. So it has to be fair to both sides. So I don't necessarily disagree with what you're trying to do, and that I hear what you're saying, but I also think if you're going to do that, you're going to have provide an opportunity to challenge the signatures that were considered statistically valid as well. So,
Madam Chair, may I respond?
Sure.
Okay. I'm of the position that the state has an interest in not getting it wrong in a way that invalidly excludes somebody.
Right.
And so that is the reason why they tend to permit more marginal signatures than they reject, because they're saying, well, we don't want to accidentally get rid of, we would rather let someone in who shouldn't be let in than exclude someone who should not be excluded.
Okay.
And I think that's a reasonable approach to take.
I think as long as the standards are explicit and apply evenly, then yes. I think the problem is that people feel like the standards do not, and that's really the issue, is that it's issue-based. And that's the joy, I think, actually, of statistical sampling, is that it's a pretty objective criteria, as far as I can tell.
Fair point.
All right. Anything else? I'm going to give Mr. Meek a few more minutes. But I really appreciate you guys coming. I think this is an issue that warrants a lot further discussion. So, Mr. Meek, a few minutes. A couple seconds.
Minutes, I hope. I'm troubled with that the same provision that Sal mentioned was dropped from the -1 amendments, and that is simply allowing petitioners to correct things on the sheet that are clearly wrong. For example, some folks, like we in the last cycle, went to the trouble of entering all of the signatures and addresses into a database so we could make sure that we weren't going to be harmed by having a number of duplicate signatures be counted. Every duplicate signature that is found counts 400 against you. Every triplicate signature, I can hardly imagine what that's going to count against you. I don't even remember. But the current interpretation is that if we go through our petitions and we find a duplicate signature, and they may be signing duplicate deliberately, in order to reduce the number of valid signatures that would be found through the sampling process. We find a duplicate signature, we cannot cross it out because doing so invalidates the entire sheet. The only way to avoid the duplicate signature is to throw away 9 valid voter signatures. Okay. Number two, let's say we find a signature that says Frank N. Stein at Transylvania Boulevard. Okay, we know that's wrong. Should we cross it out? Well, we can't now. Because if we cross it out, that invalidates the entire sheet and 9, hopefully, valid voter signatures, people who don't live on Transylvania Avenue. So that's what this amendment attempts to do, is to allow the provision in House Bill 2082 to be implemented in a way that is not blatantly disrespectful of the rights of people who sign petitions. But that is the way it is proposed to be implemented now. On the Dash 2 amendments, just briefly, I think you will be revisiting this because I've heard that the referendum 303 case will be appealed. And what the Ninth Circuit has said is that voting is a fundamental right subject to equal protection guarantees under the Fourth Amendment. The ballot initiative, like the election of public officials, is a basic instrument of democratic government. I'm leaving out the cites. And is therefore subject to equal protection guarantees. These guarantees further apply to ballot access restrictions just as they do to elections themselves. Now, what we have, you mentioned, Chair, that there should be challenges both ways. Look at vote by mail. There are challenges both ways. Any elector can flag any voter's signature and say, I don't think that's the signature, and I challenge it. What happens, of course, you're not going to challenge signatures that look roughly the same because it's a big waste of time. At that point, the county elections official must send a written notice to the voter that there has been a challenge, and the voter has 10 days to provide some indication that is their signature, including a new voter registration card. That's what the Dash 2 amendments would have done for initiative signatures, and I believe that the federal courts are going to require that in any event. So you'll probably be looking at this in the next session after the initiative process, as they're subject to a great deal of controversy in the meantime.
The statement you just read from was that from the Ninth Circuit or was it Judge Mossman's opinion?
No, that's from the Ninth Circuit. That's from the
another case.
Idaho Coalition United for Bears versus Santa Rosa case in 2003.
Do you agree with that analysis that initiative signatures should be treated with the same level of scrutiny as our ballots are treated?
Yes.
Okay. So you would do what it takes to have every single initiative signature checked and verified.
That's not necessary. No one's complaining about the sampling process.
Okay.
But when you do verify a signature that is sampled, I believe due process does apply. That signature cannot be tossed out for no reason, and it cannot be tossed out for a wrong reason.
Wouldn't that undermine all of statistical sampling if you gave it the same level of due process that we give a ballot? Because we count every single ballot, and the county clerks check every single signature. I mean, wouldn't that provide the same level of verification process that you give to the initiative and referendum process?
Chair Brown, I'm not understanding your question.
Basically, what I heard you say is that you believe that initiative signatures are entitled to the same level of due process that we give every ballot.
I'm saying that they are entitled to due process.
And so
yes.
What I don't understand is then how you would apply, you would argue that statistical sampling would give every initiative signature the same level of due process that you do give in an actual vote count.
Well, first of all, I don't challenge the premise of statistical sampling.
Okay.
And it may be the court will take it an additional step that no one is asking for, which is to require every signature to be individually verified just as they are on voter envelopes.
Okay. All right.
On the rest of the amendments, the rest of the amendments I support, although none of them go as far as I would.
Okay. All right. Any more questions from the committee? We really appreciate the three of you being here. Appreciate your testimony. Mr. Lindback, did you wish to add anything? Can we get a call into Senate President Peter Cornyn? You guys are no's, right? Okay, all right. Another spell going in protection. All right. Mr. Lindback, I look forward to the due process discussion at some point.
Yeah. I'm John Lindback, the Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. I just wanted to thank the sponsor for being responsive to our concerns. We had extensive discussions with her about her original version of the bill, and we feel she was very responsive to our concerns, and we appreciate that. Yes, indeed, it would require a fiscal, particularly of concern is that the effective date for moving the signature verification into our office would be right away. We'd have very little time to ramp up and so on, and we'd obviously need the money right away if we were going to do that right away. I just wanted to respond to one discussion here. That it was news to me that we were not going to allow chief petitioners to cross out a name and not submit it for verification. Our interpretation of the law is that that chief petitioners can cross out a name if they find a duplicate and not submit it for verification. And what we look to is 260567 subsection 3B, which gives the definition of a person who signs the petition. It means the person whose signature will be submitted for verification under ORS Chapter 249, etc. If the signature has been crossed out, we do not regard that as being submitted for verification. So I don't think, at least it would be news to me, the Elections Director, that we wouldn't be allowing that. And I just want to allay the concerns of Mr. Meek and others on that. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Lindback? All right.
Oh, I do have.
Okay.
I think we already determined that there were no, in recent memory at least, there are no incidences of voter caging in Oregon. So I'd like to ask that question again just for the record.
We've received no complaints in Oregon about voter caging.
Okay. Follow up on that. Sarah Montes Anderson.
Then follow up on that. But you're not opposed to having preventative medicine, so to speak.
No, as I said, we appreciate the. We have no opposition. Certainly no opposition to those provisions of the bill.
All right. Thank you. I've spoken like a true nurse. All right. Anybody else wishing to testify? Make any comments? All right. We are at ease until the arrival of the good Senate president. So.
What? You don't believe what they're trying to do in here, man.
Okay. All right. Oh, we do have a technical amendment. Okay.
The language.
Okay. All right. It's okay.
But when you can say what they said on the letter, this is
okay.
This will be submitted to council.
All right. So should we move the -3 amendment first? And then, or should we move the conceptual amendment to the dash? Free amendment. Okay.
All right.
We're opening a work session on Senate Bill 1083. I'm sorry. And I am going to move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of moving a conceptual amendment to the dash three amendments. And if the committee enjoys, I will go ahead and read it. It is to page 9, insert on the dash threes. We're going to move the language to amend the dash three amendments, page 9, insert after line 2, sub C. Paragraph B of this subsection does not apply to complaints filed under subsection 1 or 2 of this section that involved an alleged violation subject to penalty under ORS 260.993.
Madam Chair, explain, since Senator Farioli was in the other room, the reason this was in, it had to be put in because they realized that the felons, they would have to address all of the complaints that the felons who cannot vote would pose. So that's why that was put in.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Moss Anderson, for that explanation. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Okay. So the motion is to suspend the rules. Any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Move to conceptually amend the dash three amendments, page 9, insert after line 2, the language I just read. Any discussion?
Only an observation, Madam Chair, that if we're into conceptual amendments, it must mean that sine die is imminent.
I think you're going to be hearing 1 hour notice coming up rapidly. So, any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none? So ordered. Senator Moniz Anderson.
I move the dash three amendments to Senate bill
as conceptually amended
to Senate bill 1083.
Senator Moniz Anderson has moved the dash three amendments as conceptually amended to the dash three amendments to Senate bill 1083. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing and seeing none? So ordered. Senator Moniz Anderson.
I move the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 1083.
Senator Moniz Anderson has moved the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 1083. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Moniz Anderson.
I move the dash five amendments to Senate Bill 1083.
Senator Moniz Anderson has moved the dash five amendments to Senate Bill 1083. Any discussion? Any objection?
I move Senate Bill 1083 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Moniz Anderson move Senate Bill 1083 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I would just point out that if this bill removes the use of the Postal Service, which is an irony because that's how we register and that's how we vote. If this bill removes the use of the Postal Service to create a list of a challenge list to challenge the validity of registrations, it should also contain a clearly defined mechanism by which ordinary citizens can exercise their right to help assure the integrity of the voter rolls, and it does not. I realize that there are folks that detest the initiative process. They don't like the outcome. They don't like the process, and they will do anything they can to curtail the citizens' constitutional right to participate in direct democracy. I think that is a sad commentary on what we're doing here. So I will be a no vote, partly because I don't agree with the efforts to limit the scope of participation in the initiative process. I do believe that if we're going to redefine how people participate, we should always be careful to preserve the right of ordinary citizens to volunteer and to exercise their right to help assure the integrity of voter rolls.
Because if we disconnect citizens from the integrity of the process and stop inviting them into the process, then we really do debase this process and push people away rather than bring them into the process. So I will be voting no on the measure.
Thank you, Sir Ferriello. Anybody else?
And I do have another comment about the presence of the president, but I'll wait for other comments.
Great. Anybody else? Would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
No.
Senator Mon Sanderson?
Yes.
Senator Ferriello?
No.
Come on.
Yes.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. All right, tomorrow afternoon, 3:30, informational hearing only, City Club recommendations, indirect democracy. Should be a fascinating hearing. Love to have folks come participate. Is it brief?
It is.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, I think the watchers of this committee may notice that we have added a member at the chair's discretion and with the president's approval so that we could preserve the ability for members of this committee to file minority reports if they so desired. We had a three-member committee. By our rules, it was impossible for the minority to dissent using our time-honored traditional respect for the minority in the form of a minority report. That is why Senator Atkinson was appointed by the president. Of course, the appearance of the crash dummy to my right, no, I mean the president, indicates that we do have a fully functioning committee, and the president always has a vote. So, okay.
All right. Thank you all. Any more business to come before the committee? We are officially closed in terms of Senate business. Thank you all very much for your patience and your cooperation. We're adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.